Since the age of 11, when Britney Spears first appeared on the Mickey Mouse Club, there has not been a time when the pop singer and cultural icon hasn't been the subject of intense scrutiny. First by her fans, then by the paparazzi, and for more than a decade under the conservatorship of her father. He had control of her money, her career, and even her fertility, forcing her to use an IUD to avoid pregnancy. The Britney Spears saga reveals a dark fascination with fame and celebrity and says as much about us as it does about her, says Dr. Jennifer Otter-Bickerdike, a rock and roll and cultural historian. She chronicles misogyny, media obsession, and consumption of stars as commodities in her new book, which is called Being Britney, Pieces of a Modern Icon. And Jennifer joins me now. Hi there.
Hi, darling. How are you doing?
Great. Nice to talk to you. And we talked to plenty of academics on the show, but not all of them have the rock and roll cred that you do. Can you tell us a bit about your earlier career in music?
Well, I have to say I'm the only person that has my pedigree, darling. So it is quite unusual. I started working in the music business, if you want to call putting on shows at your local Veterans Hall at 16, the music business. So I started doing that. And this is in California, as you can probably tell by my accent. Mm-hmm. So this was the mid to late 80s. I was doing shows with No Doubt, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Sublime. And then I went to university and I realized I really wanted to keep doing music stuff, but I didn't really know how to do it. And I ended up just working at my college radio station. I got picked eventually to work for Sony at the age of 18. To be what they called a college music representative. So I was driving Nirvana and Pearl Jam around in my 1967 Volvo sedan, which was intense. Yeah, it was crazy. And then by the age of 25, I was the marketing director for Interscope, Geffen, and A&M. I left that to help Gwen Stefani start her handbag line. I left that to go work at Facebook. And when one of my friends was murdered in California, I had a complete meltdown and did what I think anyone would do, sold all my worldly possessions and moved to England to get a PhD. So that's the path, Jess. That's how it happened.
Yeah. And you've written or edited books about Nico from the Velvet Underground, Will Sargent from Echo and the Bunnymen. Britney might not seem like an obvious subject for you. Did some of your colleagues and friends ask you why?
You know what was funny is this year I have done 3 books. I did Nico and the Will book. I actually wrote the book with Will's memoir with him. Those 2 came out on the same day in July, and I was writing Britney at the same time. And people like Echo and the Bunnymen, Nico, very much cult bands, very serious, very artsy, very cool. And Britney is unfortunately not cool at all. People were just like, huh, like they really could not see the trajectory of where I was going. But the thing that Britney and Nico especially have in common is really the way the media and the mythology have treated both of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, God bless my husband, I have to tell you, because putting up with me this year, I've been an angry woman. But yeah, there's been a lot of similarities between them, and that's been mentally quite difficult, I have to say, writing about them and not even as back to back, but like at the same time, and then just going from one to the other with no break. But there is a lot of similarities, and not just similarities in the way they've been treated, similarities in the way that reviewers have reviewed them. Reviewers have talked about me in the reviews, and just, it's weird, Jesse, because, you know, I was raised in Santa Cruz, California, where I didn't even really realize there was a difference between men and women, I would say, until probably I got into the professional world. I didn't think about it. And this writing, the publishing, this has been the first time I've really been smacked in the face with it. So it's been pretty crazy, to be honest. And the Britney story is just such a great example. I mean, a great example in a horrible way of the way women are treated.
Yeah, we'll get to that. I'm fascinated by parallels with her and Nico, though lots of people in our audience will know a little about Nico. But was she the Britney of her time, or is it just the way in which she was treated compared to, say, members of the Velvet Underground?
Ooh, you know, I've never heard anyone say, was she the Britney of her time? I think I might steal that and trademark it here in the UK. So thank you for giving
me. Yeah, it's all yours.
I, I, what, You heard it here first. I think the big similarity there is there's different myths about Nico that people have, such as she was racist, she was a horrible addict, she was this super groupie. There's just these different kind of threads that are the main things. Like when I first was telling people that I was going to do the book on Nico, if they knew who she was, those were the main things they said about her. And some of those things are true. She did have a chemical dependency. She did sleep with a lot of famous people. She did have things that were problematic in terms of race and even gender, I would say. But she also was a product of her time, and she was trying to unpack and figure out who she was in a complicated world in a complicated moment. So it's far too simplistic just to say, oh, she was a racist. And if we compare her to Lou Reed, or if we compare her to David Bowie or any of the other, characters that were around, let's call a spade, all these gents were, having whatever hot thing walked by them, as any of us would at that time, So why shouldn't she get hers? All those people were doing drugs. Why shouldn't she do drugs? It's just that she is criminalized for daring to be a sexual creature. She is put down for being an addict. And it's in what I would say that her working with her story and Britney's, it made me look at myself and the way that I have been like, ooh, like Kurt Cobain, Chris Cornell, men I've worked with that had addiction problems. You definitely, our society holds them up in a different way than we do women. I definitely think that.
So
So
back to
that was really kind of interesting for me.
yeah and so you have a really interesting way of looking at Britney in the context of her time, and it's the first time I've seen her rise and her phenomenon linked to the AIDS epidemic. So take us back to the 1990s and what was going on in the world and in America when Britney arrived.
I love that you focused in on that because that's such a huge and important phenomena. And I'm someone that I really want to do a project just on AIDS in general because I feel like I'm 49 years old. My cousin died of AIDS. I have a lot of friends that died of AIDS. And there's this whole generation, specifically of men, that are just gone. And because I'm a professor, I deal with all these young kids. They're just like, well, if I get HIV, I'll just go in the cocktail. It's no big deal. And it's just, you are forgetting this very, very recent history of what was happening. Not to mention the artists that came as an artist, what came before you, and just the people, normal everyday people that came before you and were struck down and ostracized for this. So in terms of Britney, as someone that was growing up in the Bay Area, San Francisco was ground zero for the AIDS epidemic. And in terms of what Britney comes along at a time when the amount of people infected with AIDS was at the all-time highest. You had in America specifically, the sexual education that rhetoric that the president, like we're talking the very, very highest office in the land, was pumping money into was it to be abstinent. So the sex education in school was telling you to be abstinent and that the normative relationship that should be had is between a man and a woman. So heterosexual sex, and the best way to be in a relationship is abstinence until marriage. This is in the late 90s we're talking about, Jesse. This is not like 1950 we're talking. This is recent history. So it's absolutely boggling. And what's fascinating is when I look at it now, I have a lot of friends that are in their 20s and 30s, and it's funny because I talk to people my age and like we were scared to have sex because we were scared we were going to die. Literally scared we were going to die. So when you throw Britney into the mix, there's this incredible fear that's still lingering. AIDS is uncurable. AIDS can kill you. And Britney comes along. Here she is. She's like this perfect marketing tool in terms of, as a teenager, you want to feel cute. You want to feel sexy. You're like figuring out who you are. Britney has all that. But she also is, a good Christian girl from the South. So the parents feel safe giving it to the kid. She is like this perfect elixir for everybody. That's, I think, one of the reasons that her downfall, if you want to call it that, when she dares to have sex is so huge, is because her whole thing was based around this moment of incredible fear that you were indoctrinated into as a young person living in that moment in time in the United States. And it's something that I didn't even realize was happening to me. I actually realized it as I was writing the book.
I'm speaking to Dr. Jennifer Otto-Bickerdijk, who is a rock and roll and cultural historian, and her book is called Being Britney, Pieces of a Modern Icon. And that song, Baby, Hit Me Baby One More Time, struck a chord around the world, and yet you note there was a bit of a generational divide in how that was received, Jennifer. For kids, they saw that video a bit different to how adults saw it.
Absolutely. I mean, I talked to younger women and they saw that as very empowering. Here you have Britney slamming the locker. You have Britney tromping down the hallway. You Britney, she's looking at the with desire. The boys objectified in that video. So for girls looking at that, it was definitely something that they aspired to. And the other thing that has to be remembered about that video is that all of the clothes were bought at a place called Kmart, which I don't know what the equivalent
Yeah,
would
we've
be
got
for you
Kmart.
folks, but okay, so very low cost attainable clothing. So it isn't like, clothes by Gucci that none of us can get. Kids could literally go there and get the exact same clothes that Britney's wearing. So what is so important to look at here, Jesse, is that it's the adults that are looking at it saying it's Lolita. It's the adults looking at it saying she's trying to be this teenage seductress. As a kid, you don't even know what that is. You're not even aware of that character or those archetypes. That is parents and adults putting that onto that video, not children.
Can I ask, do you feel that Britney's music or her contribution to her music has been lost in the rest of her story?
Oh, child, 100 million%. Like the least important thing, unfortunately, I feel for Britney is her music and her business acumen. Britney's become a media spectacle at this point. And that I think is so sad. The music's fantastic. And there's probably going to be Britney fans that are going to call right in or moan to you, be like, that's not true. But it's, if you, I have a Google alert for Britney that I get every single day. And it's never Britney's song is doing so wonderful or Britney's perfume is doing so great. It's always Britney's wearing a fab little tiny red bikini. Brit paparazzi sto what follows Britney into the gas station bathroom. This just happened the other day. This is not from 20 years ago. It's, Britney is a media phenomena and it's completely taken over. That's what has become the thing about her, not anything else, which I think is really sad. And I think that's what she'll be, unless something dramatically changes, that's what she'll be remembered for.
This is a really tough question, but this obsession with the bad stuff, Britney's body and her love life and the gossip and the scandal, is that driven by editors and the media? Is it driven by the worst people among us? Or is it driven by something instinctual that is a weakness in all of us?
I think one when Framing Britney came out at the beginning of February of this year, I believe it came out, there definitely was a who is at fault? And everybody wants to point a finger at somebody else. You don't want to look in the mirror and go, you know what? I clicked on that link or I picked up that newspaper or I was laughing along. And the answer is the newspapers report on what we are going, when I say newspaper, I mean media. You're doing this interview because people want to know about Britney. If people didn't want to know about Britney, you wouldn't be doing it. That's the bottom line. So the media covers what people want to hear. It's a revolving cycle, if you would. So the people want to know about it, the media covers it. And one feeds the other. If suddenly people said, you know what, we don't want to hear anymore about Britney's abs or who Britney is dating or if Britney went into the public bathroom or not, then it would just fall off the news agenda. I mean, you look at things here and I live in Britain, and here in Britain, for example, like Afghanistan was a huge news item a couple months ago. That's completely fallen off the news agenda because nobody's interested in it anymore, unfortunately. And you can look at 10 million other things. When Britney said on June 23rd, she was talking about the contraception and how she was being forced to by her conservator to have a IUD in and not have children. That I got a lot of calls about that and about who can control a woman's body. Why we should be talking about who controls a woman's body every single day, not just when Britney Spears brings it up. But the thing is, that's not what people are interested in talking about. So in terms of who's at fault, we are all at fault.
How bad did it
What are you
get when
going
it
to go ahead?
comes to dissecting her body? Conversations around her breasts. Can you take us back to that time and the sort of conversations that it seemed okay to have?
I mean, that was just insane. When I think it was most insane because I was working in the music industry, and I'm someone that, again, grew up in a very liberal town called Santa Cruz, would go around wearing, I'm a feminist, this is what a feminist looks like t-shirt. And yet, in the early 2000s, you have this teenage girl facing a room full of usually mostly male journalists. And the questions are, does she still, are you still a virgin? Are those your real breasts? It's just completely insane. I can't even imagine, like at my age, if someone was asking me those kind of questions, let alone as a child or a young woman, someone asking me that. It was absolutely incredible to watch that that happened and that nobody blinked an eye or stepped in and thought, that's kind of strange. And to watch the way that she handled it with just such aplomb and like she would like laugh about it and just be so like it was a normal question, like it wasn't weird or bad or offensive.
Because what
So
choice
I
does
think
she
that really
have,
says
right?
something about her character. Because what's she going to say? Like, you're a complete jerk. Don't ask me that. And then who's going to look bad? She's going to look bad, not the person asking her the question. That's the thing. She's going to look like, oh, she's a trouble to work with, that Britney Spears. So the whole thing about Britney's body, and you can see this for a lot of stars, but Britney's a prime example, is we feel like it's our property. It's our property to look at and dissect and compare to. So even now, like you look at her and go, that's the body of a 40-year-old woman that's had two children. Like I don't know many 40-year-old women that look like Britney Spears' body, let alone someone that has two children. And we compare ourselves to that. And the way that the press wrote about her, like it just sets strange standards, not just for Britney, but for everyday people as well, that even Britney cannot live up to those standards herself, let alone a normal person who's reading along what's happening with Britney.
Yeah, that's one thing to consider, isn't it? All those invisible messages that are being reflected back off Britney and towards every woman who's watching this coverage.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I talk about in the book is the Britney show Chaotic that she did when she first got together with Kevin Federline. And she got absolutely demolished by the reviewers saying how horrendously bad Chaotic was. Saying that she looked piggy, she had stumpy legs, she looked dumpy, she had zits, like the most wretched, rude, evil things. You look at it and it's like, okay, have you ever seen this? Like, I don't know if you guys get Jersey Shore there. This,
Yeah, we
you
know what
guys
you're
get
talking about,
Jersey
yeah.
Shore? You guys have electric, do you guys have electricity down there in New Zealand?
We've got Kmart, Jersey Shore, and electricity, yeah.
It's all happening. But you look at these reality shows like Jersey Shore or X on the Beach or whatever these things are that we have now. All of those, like Britney was basically doing that on that show Chaotic. Like she had a camera, it was just her close up talking about what's happening in her life, talking about sex. And it was just that's what it was. And just a couple years later, and she got completely like grated, just brought over the coals for that. And the way that people talked about the way she looked was just horrendous. And yeah, a couple years later, you have Snooki and all the Jersey Shore kids making millions of dollars off the exact same format. So there's something about Britney, and I like to think that there's something as a special kind of gumbo I say in the book of her being from a lower middle class background, and her being from the South, and her being uneducated, and her being a woman, that make it people feel like they can look down on her in a certain kind of way. It's very strange, Jesse, but I do think that that all plays into it.
You write that she was one of the first female celebrities in the 21st century to be both created and dismantled by the pressure of fame in front of a global audience. Our audience will remember, I'm sure, the head shaving, the freaking out, the attacking the paparazzi car with the umbrella. If she had her mental health issues today, would the media reaction and coverage be any different?
Do you know what? I want to say, oh, yes, totally, but I think no. I think, I mean, what's interesting, I was just talking to some of the Free Britney crew, and they were saying how after the Framing Britney Spears came out, there was this whole movement for a couple weeks of "We're sorry, Britney." That was like a hashtag that was going around, and it's like it's not even been a year, but it's completely reverted back. And there was this famous in the early 2000s. There was this famous clip of Britney going into a gas station bathroom barefoot. Of course, that's totally disgusting. I mean, I'm not like, oh yeah, let's do that. Let's go hang out barefoot in the bathroom. Awesome. But the fact that just in the last week, the paparazzi again followed her going into a gas station bathroom, thankfully with shoes this time. But it's just like the exact same thing. I'm like, what has not, literally nothing has changed. Literally nothing has changed. It's like, it's just like the conservatorship did not happen. It was just more media, more stuff, more fodder for the paparazzi to use. So I would love to say, yeah, we've become so far, like things would be different, but I don't think it would, to be honest. I hate to say that, but I do think it's true. In fact, I think we've become more celebrity focused, more obsessed in the vapid, more mean than we. It's weird. We talk more about mental health now, but I think we've become meaner.
We haven't even got to the conservatorship, but we're out of time. Can I just ask for your
Oh!
view on on what's next for Britney?
I hope what happens next for Britney is she gets married. If she is not secretly married already, she has a kid, she chills out, she has spends some downtime. But I think the thing with Britney is I don't know if she even knows who Britney Spears is. When I say Britney Spears, I mean lowercase, not Britney Spears, but Britney Spears. You'd remember she's been in a conservatorship from the age of 27 to 40. That's like going from a kid out at the club to being, you know, like I think when I was 27, I was crazy. When I was 40, I was married and a homeowner. It's like two different, completely different phases of your life, and she's not had the chance to live that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But yeah, I hope she's has some massive downtime.
And what's next for you?
What's next for me? I'm actually writing a book on Doris Day.
Wow,
That's what
cool.
I'm working on. Yeah. And it's crazy, like Doris Day, she was just marketed as this super good girl, forever virgin. But really, if you scratch the surface, she was like this completely huge advocate of like the gay community. Obviously, best friends with Rock Hudson up until he died of AIDS. Huge advocate of animal welfare. She had the first pet-friendly hotel in America, and she also had one of the first like celebrity-backed charities for animals in the United States. So that's what I'm up to next.
We really appreciate your time with us today. Thank you for taking us inside the Britney Spears phenomenon, and good luck with the book.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
And I've been talking to Dr. Jennifer Otter Bickerdyke, a rock and roll and cultural historian. Her book is called Being Britney: Pieces of a Modern Icon.